Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm your host, Summer Brooks, and today we have a collection of interviews for you featuring some of the filmmakers who have short films that are part of the Etheria Film Festival 2021, currently airing on Shudder. You'll be able to see all these films from June 25th through July 25th, so you still have plenty of time to catch it and see these films for yourself. Today's guests will be Katie Aaron, who wrote and directed and co-starred in the short film Bootstrapped, which is a queer time travel sci-fi romance where one woman hopes that saving the love and relationship that she lost will help her avoid destroying the world. Next up, we have Myra Aquino, who wrote and directed The Gray, which is a story about purgatory, morality, and boundaries. And then finally, we have the director, Astrid Thorvaldsen, and actress Nina Indis from the short film Who Goes There, which is a horror short set in 1880s Minnesota, focused on three sisters, Norwegian immigrants, who come across a deadly entity. So without any further ado, we will jump right on into these interviews. Hi, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and we are continuing our Etheria Short Film Festival coverage here. With me now is Katie Aaron, who is the writer, director, and one of the actors in the short film Bootstrapped, which is where love inspires a physicist to create a technology and how she tries to undo that. So yes. Hi, Katie.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for having me.
No problem. This little film is about, I'm going to say 7.5 to 8 minutes of joy. Because it is. It's a cute little story. You have a woman who says she has traveled back in time to stop the love of her life from breaking up with her, and shenanigans ensue.
Right. Probably a lot sillier than a lot of the other films in Etheria, I would assume.
But there's nothing wrong with silly. You know, there's space for cute sci-fi and playing with time travel always opens up about 100 different doors. And so talk about the creative process of this, because, you know, writing it, then directing it, then and directing yourself and your co-star in a very small 1.5 rooms, 2 rooms.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is such a awesome use of limited space.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I wrote this, let's see, it was summer of 2019, and it was I had just sort of come off the festival run of my first short film, which was also a queer story. It was sort of like this queer coming out comedy, but I really like to write sci-fi. And what I was discovering is that in like the indie filmmaking space, sci-fi is really, really hard to make because it usually requires a pretty big budget. So I really just sort of approach this as like, what is the smallest, cheapest, easiest sci-fi story that I could possibly tell so that I could then like make the film myself. And I very much wanted to have it be like not drain my entire savings type of project. So yeah, I was basically, I went into it thinking like, how can I tell a story using like as little as possible? And so ultimately I thought, okay, well, the cheapest film that one could ever make is just two people talking in a room. And the way to make that sci-fi is to have them talk about something science fiction. So I decided time travel was an option, and sort of started exploring that. And yeah, we shot it in my ex's apartment while they were gone. So, and the whole crew was just, all my friends that I was asking favors from. And Gabriella, my co-star, is also, she and I met at a theater festival in like 2016. And I had a play and she had a one-woman show. And I saw her show and I was just like, this girl is awesome, and just instantly became friends and wanted to work with her ever since. And so when I came up with this idea, I asked her, thinking for sure she would say no, like, she's way too cool to want to be in a movie with me. But she read the script and she liked it. And so yeah, it was very much like just a couple of hours messing around on a Saturday and trying to make something fun out of it. Yeah, so thank you for the compliment, because we did want it to be as visually interesting as you can make two people talking in a room be. So yeah.
Well, there's a lot of undercurrent. You learn a lot about the relationship as the girlfriend is talking to both the current timeline version and the future timeline version. And the whole thing with I lost you broke up with me, and then I threw myself into my work and I destroyed the world. So you have to not break up with me so the world doesn't go to hell. I'm like, okay, that's a lot to put on one person.
Right, yeah.
And it's awesome, and it's heady, and it's exactly what you'd expect out of a character-driven sci-fi tale. And it's kind of proof that you don't need a whole lot of special effects if you have a story that and a concept that's compelling. And just the thought of, please don't break up with me or I'll accidentally destroy the world. I'm like, wow, that's, and I laughed my ass off when that, like, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Wait, what did I just see?
That's
And
the highest compliment you could ever pay me, is that you laughed your ass off. Thank
I
you.
did that whole scene, plus the ending scene, which is where you figure out where the twist was so endearing to me. I'm like, see, now that's a story.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I did have a lot of fun with that. There's sort of a soapiness to it, because like the characters very much like are taking the situation seriously. Like it's literally like the world is at stake here, especially for Allie, the character that I'm playing. So when we were sort of directing it, we talked about sort of that almost like soapy drama aspect, where it's like so real to the characters, but like so ridiculous to the audience. And yeah, I really love that, like the most ridiculous concept of the film to me is that rather than going back to stop herself from cheating, for example, or from creating the technology or whatever, she goes back in time to stop her girlfriend from leading her to doing that. Like there's no ownership of the mistake. It's like, well, if you do this, then I wouldn't make any of these mistakes, which I think is like says a lot about how some people approach relationships, you know? So
Yeah, I did not consider that, but that's the yeah, that's failing to take responsibility for your own ox actions. And oh, by the way, here's a plate of consequences.
right.
And it's funny because the first thing I thought of, there's an episode of Angel where this one physics grad student discovers that his fiance is going to leave him. So he tries to create this device that will freeze them in time, sort of like, you know, bending quantum space or whatever around
Oh,
them.
yeah.
But this demon entity is trying to stop Angel from stopping him because since he destroys the world, that's what they want. And it's hilarious. It is complete farce, and it's just funny. And it, you know, this story put me in mind of that, where it's like, okay, love's trying to stop the world from ending, and there are people who don't want that to happen. Awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So
Yeah.
talk a little bit about the actual shooting, the filming, and like going into post-production, putting everything together.
We kind of had an adventure with that actually. I wanted to sort of make this for as cheap and easy as possible. And one of the ways in which we decided to do that was to shoot on phones. Just again, like the accessibility of that was really appealing to me. So we shot it on an iPhone, and then we had an iPad in the other room that we were using as sort of a monitor. So my scripty and AD could watch from the other room. And we had like a screen mirroring program that was showing what we were recording onto the iPad. And I got home after one day of filming. It was just one Saturday, and I was so excited. Felt like we got everything. It was a great day. You know, it was just like we're all hanging out, having a good time, filming these silly scenes. And I got home, and like 75% of the footage was completely corrupted.
Oh no.
And our theory is that the screen mirroring app that we were using interfered with the recording. So there were some video clips that had like 7 frames, and the rest of the frames had been dropped. And it was just all like most of it was unusable. So we had to have a second shooting day where we reshot 6 pages of my 7-page script.
Oh man.
And that took like a month and a half to get everybody back together. Because again, I'm just like asking people to do me a favor and come make this thing with me. So I had to work around everybody's work schedules and stuff. And Gabriella had just been cast in a play. So all of her weekends were about to be booked completely for like the rest of the fall. So there was like a 5-hour window on a Sunday that I was able to get almost everybody back together. And so we ran with that and reshot everything. And so we finally had everything. But what was supposed to, like, you know, all get done in one Saturday ended up taking like a month and a half to get all the footage. And then that second day was like so hectic. We only had Gabriella for a couple of hours. My DP was sick. We didn't have the whole rest of the crew. So that second day was like, oh God, are we gonna get it? And sort of like the first day everything went great. And then the second day it was like everything that could go wrong did. And
Oh
so,
man.
but we did get it. We did finally get all the footage. And so then yeah, we went into post-production, which was just mostly me. I edited it and I did the visual effects myself, which I dabbled in visual effects in college. One of my first jobs after college was using visual effects. But that was all 10 years ago. So when I wrote the script, I was like, oh, I have After Effects. I know how to use it. Like I can do these effects myself. And the first effect where you see both of me on screen at once, both present me and future me, that was pretty easy. That one I got done pretty quickly. But the second effect where I go back to the future in the end, broke my computer.
Oh no.
My computer was like really, really old and could not handle it. And so I ended up having to get a new computer. And then I also like re that was when I realized how rusty I was with After Effects. And so it was a really long journey trying to get a picture lock. And then by the time I did, my sound guy is a dear friend of mine. He had moved to San Francisco. And so he did all of the sound editing remotely, which took a while. And then another dear friend of mine composed the music, which also took a while because he had just gotten this like new, very time-consuming full-time job. So it was post-production was sort of a comedy of errors, but I think it was a year and a half later, we finally had our like ready to go theatrical version in time for 2021.
Yay.
So it was a journey. It was supposed to be just like a silly project with friends that took like maybe a couple of weeks, and then it ended up being pretty laborious, but totally worth it because it turned out.
Well, it is a fun film, and other than Etheria, where else will it be playing? Where else has it already played?
So far, we've screened in two film festivals in Boston, the Boston Sci-Fi Festival and the Wicked Queer Film Festival. And then we got Etheria, and then the Toronto Smartphone Film Festival, which is also in the end of June. And that's it so far.
How do you want people to, I guess, embrace this film, to see the fun in it? I mean, are there any, I guess, broader distribution plans for it?
I would love for, as many people to be able to see it as possible. I am very proud of it, and I do think it is very fun, and I think it's a very it's a fun look at, things like world destruction and love ruining everything. And I don't know. I think it feels to me it like feels very good to watch right now after we've just come out of this pandemic. Just to sort of what I really like about the combination of comedy and sci-fi is that when you have the stakes as high as they are in sci-fi, human behavior just like naturally becomes hilarious. So it's to me it's like really refreshing to watch like these stupid human characters do stupid human things in the face of like world destruction. So yeah, I don't I guess but as far as distribution goes, I think there's a couple more festivals I'm waiting to hear back from. Would love for it to end up on some sort of streaming platform. Dust is I'm a real big fan of Dust, so we've reached
Same
out to
here.
them. That would be the dream. Or yeah, something like that where it's easily accessible.
Cool. Well, yeah, I am notoriously not a fan of comedy, straight comedy, rom-coms make my skin itch, but movies that incorporate humor in a genuine way, in a way that's not berating or belittling other people to get, the joke. That sort of stuff appeals to me. I mean, their Galaxy Quest has a lot of funny moments in them, and they just organically arise out of what's going on between the people, So, and so it can be done. It can be done. I am happy. My heart is lighter and full of joy that you managed to do this.
Oh, that's such a sweet thing to say. I do
And
think that's the best comedy though, when it's about, just about like human behavior as opposed to like, I mean, you mentioned not like berating anyone. You definitely like don't want to ever like punch down or anything. I think the best
right.
comedy and the healthiest comedy, like the comedy that's like best to watch as an audience member is always when you're laughing at yourself or like not like yourself as an individual, but like ourselves as people.
As why in the world did we have that extra beer?
Yeah.
So where can folks find you online to keep track of what else you're doing and just follow what you're making for us to watch?
Yeah, sure. The best place to keep up with me, I would think, is Instagram, where I am at Katie underscore Aaron. And my username is the same on Twitter, Katie underscore Aaron. I don't tweet as much, but if you're more of a Twitter person than an Instagram person, then you can find me there too.
Cool. Now, I do have another question. Are there any plans for other little sci-fi vignettes, or maybe expanding this into a longer story?
I don't know about expanding this particular story with these characters. I am working on a time travel feature right now. I'm sort of in very early stages of developing it, sort of based on the same concept of so I sort of came up the with the idea after reading in a book about how if we are ever to discover time travel, then it's likely we would discover how to move forward through time, but long before we'd ever learn how to move backward through time. And I was very fascinated with that concept, that it wouldn't be all at once. Because you sort of, when you think about time travel, you think of going back. But it was it's Neil deGrasse Tyson was talking in this book about how he thinks we're actually like relatively close to being able to figure out how to move forward. And in fact, maybe it's possible we already know how and are like seconds away from, clicking the puzzle pieces together or whatever, but that it's going to be a long time before we can ever figure out how to move backwards if we ever do. And so I have been really fascinated by that. So I am working on a feature film right now that sort of explores that, not with these characters. It is another queer romance, but it's a little bit more grounded, whereas this was sort of a heightened soapy comedy. I think the feature that I'm working on is a little bit more of a yeah, I guess like a grounded love story
More of
within
a
this.
drama.
Yeah, I wouldn't say drama. It's definitely comedy. Maybe dramedy is the right word,
Okay.
which I hate to use, but maybe yeah, a little bit more heartfelt, I guess, is what I'm going for.
Cool. Well, Katie, thank you for your time today and for making this delightful little short.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your time and for having me, and thank you for liking it.
The movie is, or the short film is Bootstrapped. It is airing during the Etheria Film Festival, which you can catch on Shudder, running June 25th to July 25th. So you've got plenty of time to go check it out. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this. Hi, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest right now is Myra Aquino, the writer and director of The Gray, one of the other entries in the Etheria Film Festival's shorts program. And it's a very interesting little story about moral choices. Hi, Myra.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
So, before we dive into spoiler territory, tell us
Sure.
about what the gray is about and where that idea came from.
Oh, okay. So to avoid going to spoiler territory, I'll just say the log line. So The Gray is a fantasy short about a former cop who has died and gone to purgatory, and now he spends mostly eternity, processing people going to heaven and hell. And then one day his 20-year-old son appears. So the idea came to me actually as a pitch to go into film school at UCLA. As part of the interview process, you're required to pitch a short that you might be interested in shooting while you're in school. And I think at the time, I didn't really have any stories that came to mind. And then I think I was just kind of brainstorming in my head. And then I think I tend to be very drawn to high concept stories. And I was raised Catholic. I think now I'm a bit more like, I'm less, I guess, devout, but I still am very much affected by ideas of the afterlife and heaven and hell. And I thought to myself, oh, it'd be what would it be like if heaven and hell or this concept of purgatory wasn't as sacred as we think it is? And it actually, we just end up in a DMV like place. And like, what would it be like for somebody who is like sort of like destined to just be there processing people? And the story is ultimately about, like what you mentioned, moral choice and sacrifice and just like these values of what I think are like Catholicism that we talk a lot about. How can that play out in a very unhealthy way? But also like, how can we see it playing out in ways that ultimately affect where the ending of the grave takes us? Which is like, well, hopefully it's a happy ending.
I just think it's a poor reflection on our times that so many stories that deal with the afterlife have a bureaucratic middle management hellhole as the waiting room.
That's true.
It's so we have to have more hope than that, right?
You know, maybe I tell people that like I came up with this idea before The Good Place came out.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't watch it until like a couple of years later. But yeah, I don't, maybe it's just like our way, like our human way of like grounding these very like abstract concepts or trying to find a way to understand something that like doesn't ultimately make sense to us in some ways, like very simplistic ideas of good and evil. Yeah, I think maybe we're just trying to find a way to like, maybe bureaucratizing it as our way of understanding something that is probably not understandable to begin with.
And I, as soon as I saw like the waiting line and everything, I didn't think of The Good Place. I thought of Beetlejuice.
Oh, really?
Because Beetlejuice had that in there. And they captured the hopeless despair of waiting in a waiting room for 100 years to be processed to wherever you may be going.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, are we really, really that dead inside that we can't choose something different? But I think it's hilarious that so many people say, yeah, it's going to be bureaucratic hell. We can't escape it in life or in death. It's just going to be there. And when the cop is just sitting there processing people, he's like looking at the little evil gray good meter on his computer screen on whether or not the person gets to go to heaven or hell. And he's got that bureaucratic administrative look in his eyes too, of like, yeah, I'm stuck here. Yeah, I'm stuck here. But then we find out he wants to stay there. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, that's different. And that leads to him, like you said, meeting his son, where in the last place he expected to see him, I guess, so soon. Talk about having that in there as, you know, instead of thinking of purgatory as a place that he's stuck, as a place he wants to be.
Yeah. I think like, I mean, that's a great direction to go, because I think that's so much of, it's kind of like what is like hell to us. And you're talking about how it's like bureaucracy is a hell in and of itself, which is very true. But also just like sometimes our like hell to us is what we've created on our own, like the prisons that we built around us that we don't know we created. And I think in some ways, like Perez, who is the cop, reflects so much of what I experienced in my own life, where I realized like a lot of times if I felt imprisoned by something or I felt like I was miserable, so much of it was because of ways of seeing the world that I kind of, I guess, got attached to, and which, like, you know, for whatever reason, like, just made me miserable. I, like, if I was pessimistic about something, or like, I just kind of was like self-sabotaging myself for whatever reason, I was just like, I think that's something that I felt was, I put into the character of the cop. And like, you think that sometimes, like, I think when we think about heaven and hell, like, we think that someone is making the judgment on us, and that like, we're the ones who are sort of being judged by somebody else, and then we just end up wherever you are. But, you know, what about this idea of like, we're the ones who consign ourselves to this misery, and that like, sometimes not choosing to go in one direction or the other is a misery in and of itself, and its own hell. And that's what I wanted to explore psychologically with the character.
So I don't know how to talk about this without spoiling too much, but his whole attitude changes when his son shows up. And it seems like he starts to want to make choices because of his son, to help his son.
Yeah, I think I'm always fascinated by father-son relationships, just because I've seen a lot of like them and like people in my own life and my relatives and my family. And I think like for him, it's kind of him realizing how like his own personality traits have been passed on to his son, and like seeing his son like in purgatory, like presumably like he has something happened to have him like end up there. And seeing his son misbehave and just kind of be the same person that his son was on earth, I think has made him realize like, okay, like maybe I can't save myself, but maybe I can save like somebody else. And I think that's where his choices start to change, because now he's like thinking about people beyond himself. And yeah, like his, like, it just becomes interesting because now he's stuck in this moral quandary about like, sure, I can like be the person who consigns myself to this existence, but I can't tolerate that for my son.
Cool. So you had said that this was this story was a pitch to get into film school. Was this actually a film school project?
Yeah, actually being a film school project, I basically like I pitched it in the interview, and like realized like how much I really got attached to the story, and I just loved it so much. And then I further like developed it in like screenwriting classes for short films at UCLA. And like we were put into these writing groups where we were critiquing each other's scripts, and the script was, I would say, like pretty well received. Like I think there's just like a interesting balance of like comedy and high concept, and I just felt like really encouraged to push forward with it. And so like it ended up being the second short I shot in film school. And it was really interesting. It's because like for a high concept film where like so much is taking place, I also had to think about how can I make this like very cheaply, given how like big the cast is and like how many like locations I need to shoot in, and how inventive and resourceful we had to be. It was a very interesting like creative challenge, which I found really fun actually. And it was nice to see the end product.
So how long did it actually take to get the script polished to the point where you had something you could get go into production with?
I think on and off, because we're going by the quarterly system, it took roughly, I would say, like 4 to 5 months. And if I were to be honest, I was still like editing the script like the week before we were shooting. I think it was always just like trying to punch up the jokes or like add a little thing here or there. I mean, even like during shooting, like I was just like, this joke isn't going to work, and I know I'm going to edit it out. So I feel like realistically, it took 4 to 5 months to just kind of work on a script. And then even after that, I was still like trying to edit the script out during post-production. So it's never ending.
So talk about prep for actually shooting, because the office you selected in the oppressively cramped size really does put your mind into like a 1980s DMV sort of situation.
Yeah.
and thinking back on it, there really aren't any real special effects. There's some lighting tricks, and I'm like, wow, this is very, very streamlined into getting your mind to make those inferences yourself.
Yeah. Oh, the prep was really interesting because like I mentioned, I really didn't want to use up like too much of a budget. And I think I also considered it, like I enjoy producing films as well. And I find it really fun to try to figure out what's a way I can make something on the cheapest budget possible. And like, since I was like at a university, we typically can get a lot of these like rooms or locations in the university for like a small fee. And so like, I decided I'm just gonna shoot all on campus. And once I did so, like me and another producing student, we basically just went from building to building all around UCLA. And in my mind, I'd already created this lookbook of like what I wanted the place to look like. And I grew up in the 90s, so I kind of had a sense of like it has to look this way because that's just like what I grew up with. And like, I think I just kept going from like classroom to classroom and office to office. And like a lot of the times, like what I saw were these very like modern looking spaces that are pretty much reflective of what like a lot of universities look like today. And it just felt almost like, which is like, it's weird saying like almost too soulless. And I wanted her to be some character. And then we just kind of came across this one building on campus, and it happened to be the this tutoring room for like chemistry and all the other sciences. And when I walked in, like there was this, it's this big room, but there was a portion of this room that had not been renovated. And when I walked in, it was just covered in like wood shelving, and there were just like these wood like accents all over. And like, I guess there was like this fluorescent lighting that reminded me a lot of the 90s, and just yeah. Like the linoleum flooring. I was just like, oh, this is great. Like, I think I found my space. And like, yeah. Like, and then afterwards, it was just, the challenge was to transform this room from like this tutoring space into like something that was reminiscent of the 90s. And so me and my production designers, we went to prop houses around LA. And luckily we were able to avail of the student rate. And so we were able to like check out, you know, some really cool things like computers from like the 90s, which was like such a throwback and so nostalgic to just be able to grab all these different things. And not even just things from the 90s, like things like Rolodexes and like, I don't know, landline telephones and just all different kinds of things that would just make this a space we needed it to be within the budget that we had. So it was really cool that, I mean, in terms of production design, and then casting in and of itself was another whole project, because we, not only did we need to cast for like the two main characters, but we also wanted to fill this space with all these kooky, goofy characters. And so it was just like having to get all the background actors involved and some interesting ensemble cast characters. Like it was a huge effort and took so much like time, but we eventually got to the place where we had everything we needed and we were ready to shoot. So
I have to applaud you because the first customer in line, the offended entitlement in his attitude was just so appropriate. And Perez is looking at him going, nah, dude, nah.
And this is kind of like he's trying to save himself and like negotiate all of these things, but at the end of the day, like all Perez has is this like this like sort of 90s era computer that's telling him where on a scale this guy belongs, and even the scale isn't perfect, which is a part of what the film examines too.
And that I thought that was hilarious because you have this, old 90s style CRT monitor and the graphics on it aren't, they're like, Legend of Zelda original version quality. And I'm like, they even got the 90s graphics right. That's awesome. Oh, so big golf clap to your special effects person for getting the right decade of technology in the graphics.
She did a really good job in capturing like getting that or landing that like aesthetic.
So, how long have you been sending this film out to festivals to be screened, and what sort of reactions have you been, or feedback have you been getting?
It hasn't been very long. It's probably been just like probably like a few months since I've been sending it out. To be frank, it's like the first like short film I've really started sending out, given like my career is still like pretty early. But in terms of its reactions, like it's been really nice because I've been hearing back from people who like I've never met before, saying that they enjoyed the film and thought it was fun. Because I think it's one thing, like especially in the film school setting, where like people say like they like your film or they thought it was good, but it's kind of like they know you. So I think in the back of your head, you're always like, are you just saying this to me because you want to keep the harmony? Because I think to a certain extent, at least for me as a filmmaker, you work and you edit a film for so long that you no longer feel like you can see it objectively anymore. And I think I'd come to that point with the film where it's just like I don't even know like how I like and sometimes how I feel about it because I've just seen something for so long that like I feel like my emotions have been blunted in terms of my reactions with it. So it's always nice to be able to like hear from people that I don't know because in a way they don't really owe me anything and they're just saying like, oh yeah, I really enjoyed your film or I thought it was great. And it's just like really, I feel like especially as a filmmaker, it's validating and really it's really exciting because I feel like I kind of strayed away from doing high concept shorts for a bit because I felt like, oh, maybe I need to go into more like realist films or like ground myself a little bit more. But I think getting the reactions from this has been really nice because then I just feel like, okay, maybe I can go back into high concept and fantasy and sci-fi and see where I belong in this world. So it's been nice so far. And I still feel like the journey is, there's still a long journey ahead of it. So I'm crossing my fingers.
So, are the genre films, the stories you want to tell, science fiction, fantasy, horror, that sort of thing, or?
I think some of it is like I don't like to restrict myself. But I've found that like I mean, growing up, I love genre a lot. It was what I, like me and my family members watched because we were very avid moviegoers. I mean, my favorite movie growing up was The Fifth Element. And
Yes.
it's like, I get a lot of mixed reactions when I tell people that because I think they think that I'm a cinephile and I'm going to give them something like totally different. But I'm like, yeah, I like The Fifth Element. And I just loved it because it's just like, it was so imaginative and goofy, like almost to wish like shamelessly so, and it has this like so bad it's good type like thing about it. But yeah, I just like it's films like that. It just kind of like it doesn't kind of take itself too seriously. It's just about having fun and like playing with a concept. And I think that, like, I grew up with a lot of abstract ideas about the world. Like I mentioned, like, I grew up Catholic, and I think exploring ideas of, like, Catholic values that I feel like I have a lot of conflict with sometimes. I find that sometimes, like, my way of accessing, like, my conflict with those values is through, like, sci-fi or fantasy. And, like, maybe I need to watch more, but I don't know. I know there are, like, you know, like, there's definitely sci-fi out there that deals with, like, examining religion. But in terms of, like, the brand of Catholicism that I grew up with, I don't think I really saw that examined as much. And it was just, like, my way of kind of taking a certain kind of angle to address it while still having a sense of humor about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I totally get that. It's like, I have questions. I will write a story so I can be as absurd as possible because I need to understand this. And oh my God, where did I go?
Exactly. I think that's sometimes where my, like, because I love absurdist comedy. And I remember talking to my assistant director, and he was going through the latest draft of The Gray, and we were like a week out from shooting. And he was like, I think that he was like being very serious to me. And he's like, you know, you talked about potentially having some sort of like attention deficit, like type of thinking. And I think you kind of do, because he was just seeing what, like, all the different directions my script was going in, and like just all the ideas I had. And like, yeah, I could have definitely gone into like the rabbit hole with The Gray, but I had to hold myself back. But yeah, it's like really fun. And I totally agree. It's like, you can take the most serious of ideas and questions about the world, but what if you like saw it through this very humorous, high concept angle? Like, you can go in like really interesting places with it. And that's what I love about genre and science fiction and fantasy, is that like, it has you see things in a new light that you wouldn't have seen it before.
Nice. Well, the film is The Gray, currently airing as part of the Etheria Film Festival Shorts program, which you should be able to see on Shudder until July 25th. And I recommend people go see it, because it is an understated examination of questions about morality and family. And I wish you luck on getting more people to see it and getting your next films made. Are you still doing student projects? Have you graduated yet? Or
yeah, I've graduated since like last year, and so I shot like a couple more projects, and they were very different. One was like about the sort of, it's really dark. It's about physician suicide trigger warning, and our physician mental health in the healthcare setting. And then the other one is it's basically a female centric piece based in World War II Philippines. Yeah. So I definitely went in very different directions, but I actually am now currently writing a script about a sort of this paranormal phenomenon that takes place in the Philippines. And I think they generally call it the third eye. And it's about like people's ability to see spirits and how it tends to be passed from family to like pass down families. I heard a lot about it growing up, and I just found it like really fascinating to examine. Yeah. And it's, again, deals with issues of the afterlife, which I tend to find myself in. Like, so yeah, that's, I'm kind of excited to go back into this like high concept space again. So that's kind of a future film that I'm hoping to direct by next year.
Awesome. Are you on social media anywhere where people can follow what you're working on next?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on Instagram. My handle is _ Myra Aquino, MYRAAQUINO.
Cool. We'll have a link to that. And encourage people to check out the Etheria Film Festival on Shudder. And Myra, thank you very much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you so much for like asking me such like great thoughtful questions. I really liked it.
Awesome, awesome. And just for the record, I also am a fan of the Fifth Element.
Yes. I love it when like people like tell me that because it just makes me feel less alone in the world.
Well, one of us, one of us, one of us. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this. Hi, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and we are continuing our coverage of the Etheria Film Festival, talking about a short film called Who Goes There, which is a supernatural flavored Western, and they had me at Western. So right now, my guests are director Astrid Thorvaldsen and actress Nina Indis. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, this film, like I said, I've always been a sucker for a Western. It's probably why I also love space opera, because that's, Westerns with spaceships. But to film a short film that is based in 1880s Minnesota in this day and age, so convincingly, with just that atmosphere of a Western that was filmed in the 1960s, I have to say bravo.
Oh, thank you.
So we have a situation. I don't want to spoil it for people who are planning to watch the short, but we have a situation. Three sisters out on the prairie. One of them's gravely ill, and a mysterious stranger shows up in the middle of the night, causing havoc, is all I'm going to say. How did you come across this story, Astrid, and decide that this was the one you wanted to make?
Yeah, so this was made as a graduation film at the National Film and Television School in the UK. And there was a writer I really wanted to work with again. His name was William Gillies. And we are both like very big horror nerds. And we had also like been obsessed with the Western genre like over the last couple of years. So I went to him and I said, like, I want to do a Western horror. And he said, that sounds crazy, let's do it. So that's how it all started. And I wanted to make a Western like with the female perspective, with the story told through a female perspective. And yeah, that was how it kind of came about. So we started out with wanting to do something with women together in a house and kind of talk about isolation and paranoia and what happens when the like your family is everything you have left. What happens when then that starts to change and become something alien? So that was like our starting point for this film. And then a couple of like elements came along the way, like the whistling. I can't whistle, so I think it's quite scary. So that's how like these things kind of came about in a very collaborative process with the writer and also the producer, Leah Bethany Jones.
Nice. So, Nina, how did you come to be in this film?
I basically fought myself into this film. I remember at the time I was living with another director who knows Astrid, and she told me that NFTS they're casting for a grad film and they need Norwegian actors, and I was like, wrote to my agent and then didn't hear anything for a good, I think, 2 months or something. And then when I finally got the audition, I read the script and I was like, yes, Ingrid, that is, I have to play this character. And I remember being recalled, but actually not for the part of Ingrid, which I ended up playing, but for the part of Liv and Ada. And I remember like you know, all characters are fabulous and amazing. It was just because when I read the script, I really connected with Ingrid, and I just wanted to play her. And when I got the recall, my heart kind of dropped, and I was like, oh, what? I want to, what? And I basically wrote this email to my agent, and I said, I will come back for the recall, but I'm going to read for Ingrid. And then they agreed, luckily. And so, yeah, I don't know whether that was a huge rude move or like a diva-esque move, but it worked. So I'm happy.
Yeah, it really worked, Nina, because I remember we were considering you for Ingrid, but then we just wanted to check if you like would work for Liv as well. But you made a very like convincing case, because like Ingrid, I feel like she is very stubborn as a character. Yeah. So you kind of like nailed it, I think. And everything.
Yeah,
worked out,
you said that. And I was happy. I was happy when you told me that, because after that I thought, oh my God, they're never gonna want to work with me because I come across as such a stubborn person. But
perfect.
No, I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there was an element of stubborn, headstrong persistence that you shared with the lead character of Ingrid, and they said, yeah, score, we got it.
Yeah.
I suppose.
Exactly like that.
Yeah.
So where was this filmed? Because it's very prairie-like, very open sky, nothing around. I'm guessing that the inside of the house was a set and the outside was a prop.
Yes, that is correct. And this was all like one of the big challenges for us, since we were shooting in the UK and we didn't have a massive budget, so we couldn't go to the US. And it turned out very difficult to find like these vast open spaces in England with wooden cabins. So for the exteriors, we went to Wales, actually, because we saw that An American Werewolf in London was filmed in the same location. So we thought we would take a look up there, and that worked out when we kind of graded the grass a bit yellow and we had to take away the sound of like all the sheep that sounded like they were dying in the background. So, and then our production designer, Peter, he built the interior set of the cabin at the school in the studio. And then we took with us parts of that out to Wales. And then we actually relied on special effects to do the whole, like the exterior cabin shots as well, to extend the cabin. And the roof is completely like visual effects. So yeah, that was very interesting, and it was a good challenge, especially for the cinematographer and I, when we were working out like how to shoot it. But it was really creative and great to have those restrictions. But I hope it looks like Minnesota.
It looks generic prairie enough, especially at night where it's pitch black. You don't expect to see ambient light in the background in the 1880s, and the eeriness of how dark everything is in the background just comes across well. And knowing that American Werewolf in London was your inspiration for finding a place to shoot warms my heart, because that's a classic. That's an awesome movie.
Such a good one.
Now, Nina, how did you approach getting into Ingrid's mindset? Because you have this oldest sister, she's holding her family together, her younger sister is gravely ill, and there's a lot of fear and a little bit of paranoia, and through some of it there's still a stoic nature about her. How did you approach Ingrid for that?
Yeah. I suppose There's quite a lot of similarities to Ingrid and me in terms of we're both the oldest of three, and there's a certain feel of or sense of having to be the head of the family, which I share with this character. And so before we started shooting, I remember Astrid and I had quite a lot of discussions, and we were talking a lot about Ingrid's past and what was driving her, what her objectives were. And then we also explored her, like a feeling of guilt. And I feel like that was the feeling, or that was the kind of theme that really helped me to get into her character. There's a sense of guilt that she carries, with the fact that her parents are both dead and she's having to take over what her parents built. Firstly, they took a massive risk leaving Norway and going over to America and creating a whole new life. And then it's that burden or kind of pressure of upkeeping that, what they had already created, and feeling like she's failing, but also the fact that her youngest sister is now suffering and maybe dying from the illness that her parents died from. And I was thinking, I mean, I was exploring this, yeah, just feeling of guilt, and that when, I suppose, when the parents were ill, it made sense that the two older sisters were doing the physical work whilst Ada would be home tending to her parents. So she was at, I suppose, close proximity to the illness, and that's how she got ill. So I think that's the sort of sense that Ingrid carries through. And therefore she also gets really, she couldn't live with herself if her sister died. It would basically, in her mind, it would be her fault. I suppose that was part of it. I'm trying to like remember back to when we shot this and before we started shooting, how I kind of got into her. But I remember just having, yeah, lots of really good discussions with Astrid, and we always had rehearsals before shooting, so like block runs and rehearsals with the other actors as well. So that really helped, I suppose.
Yeah, but Nina, I remember seeing your, I saw your script and it had like all of these color-coded like parts and it was so detailed. So, and also like I remember I didn't have to do that much. You were just like really in the character. I felt like it's always like scary the first, like when you do the first scene. But I remember you just like walked on to this field in Wales and you just did it, you know? And
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm a little bit of a perfectionist. I think prior with my prep, I'm a perfectionist and I like to analyze the script and go through everything and kind of figure out the character's speech pattern and dialogue, how she talks, whether she talks about herself or about other people or whatever, how other people are being affected by my character. And so I do all of this prep. And I like putting it down onto the script because it's physically there and I can kind of see it. But then once I get on set, I kind of just scrap it. It's almost like there's this paranoia before shooting where I feel like I have to be so prepared. But then when I get on set, it's like I actually don't really think about it. But I suppose maybe in that way I'm imprinting it into my subconscious so it comes out anyway. I don't know. Yeah, but that's interesting that you said that because I had forgotten that I had color coded the script. But yeah, that's something I would do.
It sounds like it's you just like to be prepared enough to absorb everything, all of the notes and everything before you start actually get on set and they shout action. And then you leave all of the obsessive memorization behind and just become that which you've read about and prepared about. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. I think it also, in a way, just thinking about it, because Ingrid is the lead character, and so a lot of the story is driven by her, that gave me the chance to also be very prepared and to take, to make decisions on how I wanted to do her. Because I think, depending on what project it is, it could actually be a negative, being so prepared. You know, so I'm glad that it lent itself and it was positive for this project. Yeah, but when I've been on other projects, it's just not been, I couldn't be so prepared, because you never know what the other actors are going to do.
Cool. So Astrid, how long did it take to shoot this, both in studio and in Wales?
So it took 7 days to shoot. We had 3 days outside and 4 days inside. So there was never enough time, but it was really, yeah, just a really fun shoot.
And was there a lot of post-production that needed to be done other than, you know, I'm guessing erasing airplanes going by?
It definitely, we were lucky with that. We thought there would be cars and stuff, but that worked out nicely. So, but there was, I've never worked on a film that was this dependent on special effects. So like when they did the cabin extensions, that was really exciting, because I felt like I didn't really know, even though we planned it, I didn't really know what the cabin would look like. And also we had, so this is a spoiler, I guess, but someone catches fire in the film, and we always wanted to do that as a stunt, but then that would take half our budget to set someone on fire once. So that wasn't really an option. So that also, we needed to cheat that a bit. So we kind of had the actor acted like he was on fire, and then we had a dummy which we put fire to, and then kind of tried to do the same movements, and then the special effects department did their like magic afterwards. So there was a lot of post-production, and also just in creating the world, like with the music and the sound design. And I think like it's always very important when you make films, but when you make horror, I think everything like almost like falls on the sound design. So we spent a lot of time on that, to getting like the right creaky sounds and the right kind of footsteps, and also like how to build this demon, like the sound of the demon, because we knew we wanted whistling, but then we had to kind of build around it. And the same for editing as well, like making sure to keep the tension throughout the whole piece. So yeah, but that was also a really fun process. Always cool. So fun when you do genre.
Yeah, horror to me is the genre that depends most on sound effects for building tension, building a little bit of terror, because even just the slightest sound, just slightly out of place, will cause your own anxiety to spike. And that's what you need in a horror film.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how many other festivals will people be able to see who goes there?
So you will be able to see it on Etheria. And then it's also in a South Korean festival in July. And yeah, so that's where it's at the moment. But I think like its festival run is coming to an inevitable end, I think.
Really? It's been on this festival run for ages, which is great. It just keeps on, like, there's this new festival that keeps on popping up. It's great. And now this Korean, I hadn't heard about the Korean one. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. I need to update you properly on this.
Yeah,
I do. But that's also like the great thing about making horrors and genre film. I feel like there's such a big community and like loads of film festivals, and the audience is just really enthusiastic and excited when there's new stuff. So it's a very great community to be a part of.
Well, for folks in the US and I believe also Canada, the Etheria Film Festival lineup, which includes the short film lineup, will be available through Shudder on streaming. So between June 25th and July 25th, folks should be able to catch these films. And I encourage folks to check out all of the short films because they are very entertaining, very intriguing. Do you have any like distribution plans for after its festival run is complete so more people can see it?
We are in conversations with a couple of different platforms, but nothing is decided yet, but it will definitely be able to, it will be able to watch someplace. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Nina and Astrid, can you tell folks where they can find you online in order to keep up with your next projects?
You want to go first?
You go.
Okay. So I am on Instagram. And so my handle is Nina Indis. That's it. And that's mostly where I post stuff. I also have a website, which is ninaindis.com, where I try to keep it up to date. I need to do that this week. Updated. Yeah, I think those are the best platforms to kind of keep track on what's going on.
Cool.
For me.
I'm on Instagram as well. You'll find me at Astrid Thorvaldsen. And then Who Goes There, the short film, also have an Instagram page, and it's called Who Goes There Short.
Awesome, awesome. We'll have links to that. Nina, Astrid, thank you so much for sharing your time again today. The film is Who Goes There, and it is part of the 2021 Etheria Film Festival Short Film Showcase. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Summer. It was a pleasure.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama. From heroic alien pets waiting for their families to herds of Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all. Take a ride with us at escapepod.org and buckle up because it's story time.
Hi guys, this is Tom Allison and I play Pree on Killjoys and you're listening to A Slice of Sci-Fi.
And again, for those of you who can access Shudder between now and July 25th, I highly recommend you check out the short films for the official selections for the Etheria Film Festival 2021. Those films are The Fourth Wall, directed by Kelsey Bolig, Narrow, directed by Anna Chazelle, You Will Never Be Back, directed by Monica Mateo, Bootstrapped, directed by Katie Aaron, Misfits, directed by Chiani Ray Walker, The Gray, directed by Myra Aquino, Polvatron 500, directed by Silvia Conesa. Eye Exam, directed by Aislinn Clark. It might be Aislinn Clark. Apologies for any mispronunciations, that's on me. And Who Goes There, directed by Astrid Thorvaldsen. A little bit of horror, a little bit of thriller, a lot of sci-fi. And they're all really, really good. So yes, I do recommend checking them out at your earliest convenience. What do you look for in short films of any genre, actually? What needs to happen for you to go, wow? Let me know. Send me an email. summer@sliceofsci-fi.com. Or hit me up on Twitter, @sliceofsci-fi. Love to talk about stuff. You can actually follow along with comments in the tweet about this episode. And of course, you can come on by the website, sliceofsci-fi.com, and comment on the episode there. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, iHeartRadio podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please consider leaving us a review, letting folks know that you're enjoying the show. And yeah, since they like you, they have a reason to check out the show for themselves. And you can also use Podchaser. Podchaser is the fast-growing IMDb equivalent for podcasts. You can leave a review over there, a rating over there, and again, help us grow our followers, our audience, and get information about all these goodies in the realm of science fiction, of horror, of thriller and action movies out to more people who might enjoy these insights, these interviews, these commentaries, and these reviews. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently helping to support our efforts here in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe. Your donations through PayPal, your pledges through Patreon really do help keep the lights on around here. And I'm probably very, very soon going to be starting up a Ko-fi account, a Ko-fi page, to make it easier for our PayPal subscribers who are stuck on a very, 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 very old PayPal donation scheme. And I think Ko-fi will support them better and make it easier for me to give the Ko-fi supporters access to the same goodies that Patreon supporters receive. If you want to help support, you can sign up through Patreon, patreon.com/sliceofsci-fi. Pick a tier, any tier, and you will be eligible every month. I pick a winner out of the hat, an email address, out of the pool of patrons, and that person gets a perk, a goodie from the stash of items here, be they Blu-rays, be they 4Ks, be they regular DVDs, be they books, finished books, advanced copies. I have a lot of review materials here and I can't keep them all because I just don't have the space. So the Slice of Sci-Fi supporters, the patrons, all of you, you guys get first dibs at the good stuff. If donating every now and then is more your speed rather than committing to a monthly pledge, the link to use is paypal.me/sci-fi summer. And hopefully very, very soon I will have that Ko-fi page, which would get you access to freebies and goodies for the supporters, like the folks on Patreon get to experience, although I acknowledge that it's not as often as usual, but I'm working on that. But either way you choose to support, I am grateful and thankful for your support. You really, truly do help keep the lights on around here, the websites running, the media humming. So again, I thank you all. And that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.